Hello, good afternoon. This is Andrew Cacabanzi, and I'm talking about global board best practice, which is the result of research that my team and I have conducted from Cranfield School of Management in order to identify what does it take to be a board that really is outstanding, and what are some of the board practices of today. Well, one of the most interesting things are what are some of the management practices of today, and what we're finding is something like a third to a half of the management teams in both government, the private sector, and third sector are divided on the vision. You'll find on the slide on strategic alignment, NHS stands for National Health Services. So 20 and 21% of the National Health Service trusts in the UK and the board members do not agree on the vision the organisation is pursuing, right through to 48% of Irish companies. Now, why do people have that? Well, because they have different rational views about prime purpose of the organization. Do those top managers talk about their concerns and issues? And the answer is, from a small sample of 36% in France to big samples in Japan, China, where over 70% of top managers find it very difficult to raise the uncomfortable issue. So about a third of the top teams that we've examined are continuously divided on the purpose and vision of the organization, and about two-thirds find it very difficult to discuss the elephant in the room. And so many top managers, by their inaction, really do not bring to the surface the problems that could cripple and derail the organization. So in terms of strategic alignment at top team level, those individuals that are facing strategic and operational problems, a divided team, a divided vision, are in pain. And ironically, with that pain, they have great insight about what to do and how to do it. What's unfortunate is that with that greater insight, so many of these teams end up being paralyzed. So this then raises a question about what do boards do? Are boards there to drive strategy? Are boards there to approve strategy? Well, our 14 surveys, which are ongoing, which started fundamentally in 1999, have covered countries like the US, UK, Australia, China, Turkey, even Abu Dhabi, and there is a survey now we've already started in Saudi Arabia. We've interviewed every board member, and what we found is it depends. It depends on who are the members of the board. It depends on the context of the board. What are the business issues facing the board? How does the board add value? So we ended up finding that it was very difficult to emerge with a simple best practice set of results, because what's required is that each board really considers how it's operating and what they're going to do to add value to the organization. In the UK, we found that something like 85% of board members had no shared view on the competitive advantage of the company on whose board they sit. In fact, they equally had no shared view on what makes the company better or different. And what was really surprising was that something like 85% of board members could not tell you what their colleague was doing on the board. So the selection criteria for NEDs, non-executive directors, is unclear. There's inhibition on boards. The approach to governance varies. The approach to defending the corporation's reputation varies. The approach to risk varies. But actually, the British were not as bad as the results that we found in the United States. What's interesting about the British is that on every measure of board performance, the non-executive directors highlighted that they performed much better than their managers who sat on the board or had a direct relationship with the board. And on this particular slide, you'll find that the non-executive directors, including the chairman, are the light blue line. And what they say is, fundamentally, we're making quite a contribution. And what the managers are saying of their board members is, my dear friend, you're not. So the managers downrated their board colleagues' performance contribution by about 40%. I talked about the US. The British were not too bad in comparison to the Americans. What we're finding is that some of the most inhibited boards, some of the most defense, the greatest amount of defensiveness on boards is on American boards. We've come across a large number of non-executive directors who've never met a manager in the company on whose board they sit. In fact, we have found board members who are actively discouraged from talking to staff and management. So we're finding with American boards that the strategy and board dynamics are driven by the CEO, president, and chairman, who are one and the same person. So the CEO who drives strategy has the approval of management. The CEO, who's also chairman, drives governance, has the approval of the board. The only people the board meet are the CEO. The only people the management meet are the chairman, and they're one and the same person. And the major question mark is, how can one person police themselves? We're finding Sarbanes-Oxley at a tactical level may have made an improvement, but at this broader strategy governance level has had no impact at all. In fact, it probably has made board members even more defensive than they were before because of the penalties and legal concerns that board members have should they be found guilty of misconduct. In Russia, with all the problems the Russians have, we found a very different situation. So many Russian boards were trying hard to improve the performance of their company internationally and in Russia. And on this slide, the green line indicates what the board members think of themselves, and the red and blue lines indicate what the executive directors and the senior independent directors and the chair think of themselves. And fundamentally, all these individuals are much more aligned than the UK and the US. In South Africa, there was a very different story. In terms of director qualities, what the managers think of their non-executive directors and what their non-executive directors think of themselves indicates quite a mismatch of expectations. When it comes to the chairman, the one that faced the greatest criticism was the South African chairman. We went to China and we found much the same story. In terms of strategic thinking and intellect, most managers felt that their chairman was probably quite bright and pretty good. When it came to the style of the chairman and being able to get alignment and engagement so that the board can actually add value to the business and to the management team, there was a very different story. In fact, in China, in South Africa, and our preliminary results in Abu Dhabi, which I've not yet had the time to pull together, this is a very recent survey, these were the three worst set of scores, where the management really did not feel that they were getting value add. In fact, very often, the management did not feel they were getting any value out of their board members. And the one argument that linked Abu Dhabi, South Africa, and China was the fact that there were too many political appointments and not enough appointments based on skill, functionality, and experience. We equally conducted surveys in Scotland and found in Scotland, in both the third sector and also in government, the overall scores indicated, yes, there was a difference between the board members said about themselves and what the management said about the chair and the board members, but the differences were not as great as, for example, the rest of the UK, China, Abu Dhabi, and South Africa. Australia was the only country that emerged with really having a far greater cohesion between management and board. We found that there was a much clearer view and shared view at board level on the competitive advantage of the firm and on the differentiation factors of the firm. We found with individual non-executive directors, there was a greater balance of portfolio of skills and experience and functionality. There was also a greater feeling of role contribution and added value to board performance. And when we looked at the statistics, we found that for management and non-executive board members, there was no statistical difference in the way non-execs rated themselves and the way the management rated themselves. There was a greater amount of teamwork amongst Australian boards, and there was a greater amount of open conversation amongst Australian boards. And this was something that most board members had to work very hard to achieve. So what are we finding with all this? the importance of the chairman. A bad chairman is a bad board. A good chairman usually makes for a good board. The role of the chairman is now becoming absolutely vital. In fact, the role of the chairman is probably across the world, with even different traditions, cultural traditions, and governance traditions, the role of the chairman is now becoming more important than the role of the CEO. In fact, we're finding that in many companies, the role of the CEO is slowly dwindling into the role of the COO, the Chief Operating Officer. Yet, in most countries, the role of chairman is underpaid. And if you're asking someone who's going to affect shareholder and market trust, stakeholder trust, press and media trust, defend the reputation of the corporation, establish the philosophy of the company, be a role model, be a mentor, provide strategic understanding, why aren't chairmen paid more? Well, whether they're paid more or not, we found that the outstanding chairman display six disciplines. The first is to delineate boundaries. What is the role of the chairman? What is the role of the CEO? These two questions have to be debated in relation to the strategy that the organization is pursuing and in relation to the economic position of the company in the life cycle of those markets. So we're finding that the great chairman and great CEOs always establish their role according to the business challenges the organization faces. So there has to be a debate on vision, competitive advantage, value add, differentiation. How do we develop the governance that will really defend us and the strategy to make this organization sustainable? Once the chairman and CEO have sorted out their relationship, then to delineate the boundaries between management and board so that both can provide value and know that the value provided is understood by the other party is a critical factor. The second discipline is, how do we make sense of the world around us? Does the chairman and CEO see the world in the same way? What's their chemistry like? What's the diversity of thinking? What is a global view and how does that relate to the local realities? How do the board get feedback from management and vice versa? How does the board keep in touch, not just generally, but by every project that comes to them? How do they understand what's happening in those marketplaces? So the sense-making skills of the chairman to help the board members understand exactly where that board is at this moment in time is vital. The third discipline is, how do we get this high-level conversation? How do we break an argument down into workable components? How do we position that argument so that it's coherent, so that the competencies required in order to make that strategy work are clear? And how do we have an argument that provides continuity and sustainability over a longer period of time? So the need to establish a culture of full and frank discussion, where the ultimate test is, if management puts a project proposal to the board and the board is not satisfied and asks the management to rework the arguments so that that project can be better defended, that is not seen as a negative experience, but it is seen as continuous improvement. So the robustness and resilience of board members to debate and discuss and take nothing personally is absolutely critical. You'll have seen that open debate is one of the fundamental elements of board functioning. What happens though when a board is not well aligned? What happens when the individual directors, for good reason, take different positions to each other? Here is a very delicate balance that the chairman has to provide between allowing for open debate and influencing the outcomes in the way the chairman wants. So it's not as if the chairman is dictatorial, but the chairman is able to guide the conclusion so that the other board members feel that they're getting value out of their chairman, whilst at the same time the chairman is allowing for free and open debate. So oratory, that great skill that people have talked about for 5,000 years, is absolutely important so that the chairman can work through the emotions and the tensions and the differences of opinion on the board, so that the board feels they've had full say in what they wish to say, but have also been guided in terms of conclusion. So the outstanding chairman, in being able to influence outcomes, thinks so many meetings ahead, and some outstanding chairman can even think up to 27 meetings ahead when board meetings are once a month. We find that these disciplines, from how do you establish your job and the purpose of the board, right through to discipline 5, which is living your values, are sequential. Unless you've done discipline 1, you don't progress to discipline 2. And unless you don't do discipline 2, you don't go to discipline 3. And actually, lower down on the list is living the values. And in many organizations, living the values is almost placed as number 1 on the list. Let's identify the values that make this company great. What we're finding is what you identify is the working components of both board and management, and making sure that those really work before you then identify the values and how to lead them. For a chairman to help the board members understand what are the values they wish to promote, that chairman needs to make sure that they're living those values. They exhibit the qualities necessary that the board wishes to see and management wishes to see in the board. So the self-insight to understand how I personally as chairman are affecting you, and what are my personal ethics that you will judge me on, those are clear. So this takes a lot of responsibility onto the chair. The chairman is responsible for themselves, and the chairman is responsible for the corporation. And what we're finding is that the two are linked. And the final discipline is, how do we develop the board? And what we're finding is in all sorts of ways. The board can have checklists and questionnaires. The board can have consultants come and interview them. The board can even go for psychological profiling. The board can have the chairman conduct the board review. The board can have third parties, external parties, conduct the board review. It doesn't matter which approach is used, as long as the one that is used works. So once an approach is developed, the next question is, how do we develop directors, particularly the senior independent directors, which is the UK interpretation, or the lead independent directors, the LIDs, the SIDs and the LIDs, which is the US interpretation. And there we're finding that training has to be contextualized. Yes, by all means, send some of your non-executive board members onto an external course. But the real training and development is by taking the board members to see different parts of the company, site visits, meet management, come to terms with some of the interesting challenges that are there, meet the politicians, meet the press and media, all of whom will basically give a detailed insight into the company, its strengths, its weaknesses, and what will be the responsibilities of the board members in order to make a contribution. The one area that is really critical for development is that of chairman. And what we're finding in our surveys is that this is the most underdeveloped area of the lot. So much depends on the chair. The chair is left to look after themselves. So most of the development that chairmen go through is based on their experience. And we found one particular chairman said it was based on going to dinner. So I asked the chairman, what do you mean? He said, my job is so busy. In the week, I could go to 4 or 5 separate dinners. And the only 2 nights of the week left, the weekend, are when I at least have some time to relax. And even that is not always the case. Being such a busy person, when I go to dinner, if I find the person on the left of me is interesting, I talk to them. And if I find the person on the right of me is interesting, I talk to them too. But if the persons on the left and right to me are not interesting, then all I do is eat dinner. And at this point, the chairman laughed. And he said, I don't know why I'm laughing, because that's deadly serious. I have no other way of developing myself. And in reality, this most important role is left to somebody's decision on the menu. We also found that in terms of development, to become a high-functioning board member or chairman, newly appointed to the board, the transition or learning curve could be 4 months for the people who learn very fast, or more likely 15 months for the majority. So the major question is, how can we reduce that transition time? How do we use search, headhunting, to find the right people? What brief do we give the headhunters? Do we give them a brief on the sort of person we want? Or better still, do we give them a very detailed brief on the reason for the role where a vacancy has arisen? And how do we grow the talent pool of non-executive directors when this is one of the most scarce resources that exists in the marketplace? So what does being world-class mean? Funnily enough, when others in the marketplace say so. Some of the world-class companies that have survived scrutiny were identified as such by their peers. And what did their peers say? This board is clear about its purpose, its contribution, its value add, and the management appreciates the board. The board has balance between the competences and capabilities. The board has a detailed insight into the company, and each non-executive director understands their role. There's development for the chairman. Always the development is contextualized. The great board has people who have a very limited portfolio of 3 or 4 non-executive directorships. Governance is positively handled. CSR, corporate social responsibility, is positively handled. And what happens is that the chairman with the board always determine a forward-looking agenda. So we come to the final slide. A good board is a good chairman, and that is the outcome of development. Thank you very much indeed.